Without communication, life itself would cease to exist. If that little voice inside your head that regularly tells you, "My name is Roger, today is Tuesday, and I'm in Los Angeles," if that ever went completely silent, your life would literally stop. Well, that inner dialogue can either be your best friend or your most adversarial opponent. It's the encouragement for every Olympic gold medalist, as well as the misguided voice that tells you to go ahead and commit a crime. To control that voice is a bit like asking a child who's full of sugar to just stop jumping up and down. There's almost no way to effectively stop the brain from sending messages that you don't want and you don't like. However, it does seem possible to ignore or redirect a negative voice into a positive thought. I remember one time I went to a child psychologist to discuss the choice of schools that she thought might be best for my daughter. There's this incredible woman in Los Angeles who specializes in pairing the right school to the right child, and my wife and I just decided to go and meet with her. Now, after she told us the particular school that she thought would be perfect, there was a whole lot of time left in the session, so her being a child psychologist, I decided to ask her opinion on the subject of child discipline. Specifically, we spoke of the use of words to address certain behaviors, like if my daughter was doing something that I deemed absolutely unacceptable, and I said, "Stop being a bad child," how that might affect her. She suggested to me that I should never put the words "bad" and "child" together in the same sentence. Her reasoning was that if the child heard me calling her bad, she could, over time, believe that I actually perceived her as a bad child and that my perception could eventually become her reality. It would be much more beneficial to say that removing the cat's teeth one by one with dental floss was simply inappropriate behavior. In other words, attach the negative to the action and not to the person. Well, that's all I'm asking you to do. The voice inside of you that questions your abilities, your judgments, your talents, can't always be silenced, but it can be challenged. And in its place, we can create a voice that says positive, reinforcing things that allow you to feel good about yourself, completely separate from your specific actions. Now, one of my pet peeves is when that inner voice rears its ugly head and starts to question our abilities. That little nagging voice that says, "That's not good enough. That's unacceptable. You can't do it." I believe that in order to truly be creative and successful, you have to learn to ignore that voice. A number of years ago, I had the pleasure of coaching a legendary songwriter named Bernie Taupin. Now, he was the genius responsible for writing all of the lyrics to the Elton John songs. Here in my office was the man who penned pop classics like "Your Song," "It's a Little Bit Funny," and "Goodbye to Yellow Brick Road." I idolized this guy. When I was growing up, I knew every word to every song he wrote. Now, one day, I sat down with him and I asked him a question. I wanted to know how long it took him to write a song. He looked at me slightly puzzled. "What do you mean?" he said. I said, "How long does it take you to actually create a lyric from start to finish?" He told me that he touches his pen to the paper, and when he takes the pen away from the paper for the first time, the song's done. So I said, yeah, but then you go back later and you make changes, you fix things that you didn't like. "Never," he said. "Why would I do that?" His answer shocked me and energized me at the same time. Here was a guy who was so tuned into inspiration and creativity that he could allow the creative energy to just flow through him without ever questioning its worth or its level of perfection. Now, most of us have never had that feeling. We begin to write a song or a speech or notes for tomorrow's meeting or simply try to figure out what we're going to say to a client or a customer. But almost as soon as we start to organize our words and thoughts on paper, we're already stopping and judging whether that was good enough, whether what we just wrote was acceptable. Bit by bit, we move like a little inchworm, challenging the validity and the quality of what we're trying to write. It's like a juggling contest between the left side of the brain and the right side. The game goes like this. Logic, creative. Logic, creative. Your thoughts keep flip-flopping between the logical side of your brain that says, stop, stop, let's think about this for a minute, and the creative side of your brain that says, go for it, I love it, keep on going. Bernie was able to write the songs, some good, some great, and even some horrible, and yet he never judged himself during the process. For once you start to judge yourself, you're dead in the water. He understood what it means to be completely in the moment. He was able to focus singularly on the task at hand and let nothing distract him or deter him from completion. Believe me, I'm fully aware of how in today's world we are always surrounded by potential distractions. As I'm writing the notes to this session, I hear my daughter fake crying in the back bedroom, sad that I'm not there as I usually am to read her books to put her to sleep. With all of the possible voices we hear both internally and externally, it's vital that we start to understand the concept of being internally confident and outwardly focused. Sounding great on stage is not the same thing as commanding the stage. Star presenters do more than just walk to the front of the room and coolly recite a perfectly phrased and modulated talk. They reveal themselves as energetic, warm-blooded humans who can and will respond effectively and genuinely to whatever the situation offers. Whether it's an employee's concern, a venture capitalist's skepticism, a distraught spouse, a heckler in the back row, or their own joy, they're fully in the room, in the moment, larger than life. Getting there to a place of confidence, connection, and comfort in your own skin is, at its root, a matter of communicating effectively with yourself. You'll need to move out from behind the fears, the habits, and preoccupations that keep you from being present with your listeners. You'll learn to see and change mental states that don't work for you. And in doing so, you'll give depth to a powerful voice by backing it with a powerful inner state of being. Brilliant presenters, people with charisma, are internally confident and outwardly focused. States that are easily accessible if you're willing to take the time to train your imagination and concentrate on what you want rather than what you fear. By internal confidence, I just mean that I get my confidence, my belief in myself, from a strong internal source, as opposed to what other people might be thinking about me or what they say about me before they even actually know me. Internal confidence will give you the strength you need to be outwardly focused. If you don't feel good about yourself, it's hard to focus on someone else. To be a star presenter, it's a necessity to possess both internal confidence and outward focus. Now, one giant step towards owning that confidence is the ability to be more unselfish. You need to remember, you're just the messenger, not the message. You're providing a service by offering them information they need and want, even if they don't know that they need or want it. Yet. You have to be focused on the fact that they do. When your inner voice starts to create self-doubt, why don't you do what I do? One, I tell myself that they desperately want to hear what I'm about to say. Two, I tell myself that they need to hear it. And three, I tell myself that after they hear it, they're going to love me for it. Let me ask you something. How many times a week does somebody other than your immediate family offer to take you out to dinner at a nice restaurant? Once a week? Once every few weeks? Do you know what my answer to that question is? I could honestly go out every single night of the week with somebody new and be treated to a lovely dinner. Why do you think that is? I'll tell you. It's because the people who invite me out to dinner know that without a doubt, I will be the entertainment of the evening. I'll tell stories, keep the conversation going, make them laugh, be unpredictable, and generally make sure that everyone has a great time. Now, I choose not to call myself a dinner mooch or a trained dog that everyone likes to watch balance a ball on his nose. Instead, I choose to say it's because I'm internally confident. I don't wonder whether I'm going to be funny. I'm funny. I don't wonder if I'll run out of great stories to tell. I am the story. If you understood me at all, you'd know that this has absolutely nothing to do with ego or conceit. It has more to do with the fact that I practice what I've been preaching to you, everything that is vocal power. One, I've diligently worked on the sounds of my voice and people like to listen to me. Two, I've worked on my physiology and I feel and look confident. Three, I've worked to continually focus my mindset on internal confidence and external focus. I'm there for them at dinner. I've cemented in my mind that I'm the special gift for them. In order to develop a strong internal confidence, you need to remember the reasons you decided to speak in the first place. In my story about Bruce Springsteen from the previous session, Bruce remembered exactly why he was there on stage. He was there for the audience, not himself. He wasn't thinking about his percentage of revenue from the t-shirt sales at the gig. He was outwardly focused on giving the audience the show of their lives. That's why he usually stays on stage and performs for more than 3 hours a set. He wants every single person in that auditorium to go home feeling happy. That's exactly what I'm thinking at dinner. I truly want the other attendees to be happy. It's part of my mindset. Think about the next time you have a dinner engagement planned and how you can use these techniques to have a positive impact on those around you. Be there for them. They need you to help them have a great time. Not by putting a lampshade on your head and hogging all the conversation, but simply by working on the concept of being internally confident and outwardly focused. That is, of course, unless you want to pay for the meal. Internal confidence comes from knowing your purpose, your objective, and having a detailed mental picture of the outcome you want. A person who's internally confident is like a skilled martial artist who's dropped so deeply into her own center of gravity that she's almost impossible to knock over. With eyes firmly on the goal, she's not distracted by obstacles, attacks, or the unexpected. She regains her balance and keeps on moving towards the target. To provide this centering, driving power, your goal has to be vivid and meaningful. Here are some questions you need to start asking yourself to train your ability to develop more internal confidence. One, what's the number one most special thing about me? My humor, my intelligence, my golf swing, my knowledge of a particular subject, whatever. Two, how can I share that gift with my audience? And remember that when I say audience, I mean 1,000 people or an audience of one. Three, what will it mean to my audience? Four, how can I help them? Five, does it serve any greater good? And six, how great am I going to feel when I see that they really appreciate it? Questions like these help you identify the compelling ideas and emotions that you need to tap into, both during your presentation and as you prepare. But they're not often the ones we ask. Too often, we make our decisions based on what's happening all around us. That's great if the crowd's behind you, but not a whole lot of fun if they're hostile or even worse, totally and completely disinterested. Let me tell you a story that a great friend of mine, Rod Hairston, told me. It's about a young teenager preparing for his first school dance. Every day for a week, he'd practiced moves with his mother. And when the big event arrived, he excitedly dressed up in a new suit and headed for the school gym, ready to dance until he dropped. But as soon as he walked in the door, he realized that that wasn't to be. All the girls stood on one side of the room and all the boys on the other. As music echoed in the alley of death between them, the specter of rejection was the only thing dancing as the evening wore on. Until Sam, that little geeky kid in a bright orange shirt and purple pants, blasted into the room with a big smile, yelling, "Look out, ladies, your love daddy is here!" Ignoring that stiff line of boys, he walked up to the first girl he saw and asked her to dance. She laughed and said, "No way." Completely unfazed, Sam said, "That's okay," and walked to the next girl. He worked his way down the line, meeting every rejection with a smile and a line like, "Oh, that's all right. You were too tall for me anyway." And when he found girls that would dance, he danced in the most enthusiastic way anyone had ever danced before. The boy didn't have a lot of tact, but he had amazing internal confidence. He wanted to dance, and no matter what he encountered, he pushed towards that purpose until he got it. And he was the only one at the dance who did. The rest of the kids in the room, like many a presenter, were so preoccupied with the results they were trying to avoid that they inadvertently created them. I'd like to do another visualization exercise that'll help you hone your ability to be outwardly focused. It's called the end game. Great athletes like Tiger Woods and Michael Jordan all share one interesting mindset that helps them continually win. Before they begin the contest, they focus on the end, the result. Michael's not thinking basket to basket, point to point. He's thinking about being in the locker room after the game, pouring champagne on the coach's head, and celebrating the win and the championship. Tiger isn't thinking about hole to hole either. He's thinking about how long he can hold that heavy trophy above his head while the Sports Illustrated photographer gets their next cover photo. He's thinking about how proud his dad feels when he's on the phone telling him about his latest win. Great athletes like these know how to stay focused on the result. They've learned that the unconscious mind doesn't know the difference between what's real and what's vividly imagined. Now think about that for a second. In my mind, I can create a vision that is so clear, so perfect, so real to me, that I can just choose to accept it as reality. Haven't you ever heard the phrase, "You make your own reality," or "Be careful what you wish for, it just might come true"? So my question is, what's wrong with that? If I can imagine the end result I want and then have it come true, that's the perfect situation, especially because I'm no fool. I'm only going to imagine the absolute best things happening. That's what Michael and Tiger do, along with just about every other successful athlete or business leader or doctor or lawyer or rabbi or preacher. They stay focused on the end game. For the doctor, it's all about the cure. For the lawyer, it's about the verdict. For the preacher, it's all about salvation. As a side note, I'd also like you to remember that the lawyer went to law school, the doctor, medical school, and that Tiger Woods has been hitting the ball since he was about 2. And Michael Jordan practiced hours every day of his life to be able to physically perform like that. I'm only mentioning this because I want you to always remember that the most incredible mindset in the world can only help you achieve greatness if you've done all the rest of the preparation along with it. If you happen to be in your car driving while you're listening to this session, I want to let you know that the exercises require you to be not driving in a nice, comfortable place that you can close your eyes and feel safe. So if you can do that by pulling off the road and just sitting comfortably in your car, great. If not, make sure you're at home or in a place where you feel very safe and very much at peace. This material is also in your guidebook if you'd like to work with it there. That said, on to the end game. Close your eyes and imagine that you're in a beautiful conference room. There's a gorgeous view of the ocean easily seen from just about every window. You've just finished your presentation and the audience is still clapping. The applause that started loud is even getting louder, and they don't seem to want to stop. I want you to focus your attention on their faces. They're smiling. Some of them are even laughing. They're all shaking hands with each other, hugging and saying goodbye. Now focus on them walking out of that room. A number of the people stop before they reach the door and they shake your hand. A couple of them even come up and give you a little kiss on the cheek. You're really getting the sense that they enjoyed your presentation. But what are they thinking? What are they feeling? What impact did you have on them? Did they get the results that they were looking for? The businessman comes up to you and says that he really enjoyed himself and that now he completely understands what your product is all about. He can't wait to get back to the company and explore the possibilities of working together with you. The guy with the hat tells you that the information you gave him will really make things better between him and his wife. Though they've gone through a rough patch, he knows that he can make a difference with the knowledge he learned from you. A very attractive person comes right up to you and asks, "Are you married?" You realize that you have definitely achieved your goal. You wanted to enlighten, empower, excite, and energize your audience, and you did that. They're walking out of that room thinking that you're a star. And you're walking out with your head held high, actually feeling like a celebrity. You really did it. You won the game. Now go ahead and open your eyes. All I'm trying to get you to focus on is the positive end result. If you've done all your homework and your preparation, the end of the game is the only thing left to look forward to. Use my ideas or come up with a script of your own to visualize the end of the game next time you have a presentation you need to make. So far in this session, we've discussed theory, techniques, made lists, done preparations and visualizations, but there's still one more thing I want you to do physically. Up to this point, it's all been about preparation. But now, I want this to be the one thing that signals the end of the preparation and the beginning of all the action. I call it the sound wave, and it's a particular body movement that has a specific sound attached to it. The physical part goes like this. Stand at attention with your chest up, your shoulders back and down, feet together, chin up, arms at your side. Now, keeping your hands straight and extended on the sides of your body, you just bring them up over your head and clap them together. Practice that a couple of times. Start with your hands at your side. You bring them up way above your head and clap them together. Now let's add in the sound component. I'm going to use the words, "let's go," but later on you can feel free to change the words to anything that energizes you. I'm going to start the sound down low in my chest voice and move up through middle voice and end in my head voice. It's going to sound like this. Let's go! Listen again. Let's go! Now let's put the sound and the body together. Start with your hands down at your sides. And when you start to say let's, you start moving your hands very slowly from the sides of your body up towards your head. Let's. Now, when you get to the word go, your hands are all the way on the top of your head. Let's go. Understand? Hands down. Let's go. Practice that a few times and it'll get very easy. If you're all alone and you're feeling very enthusiastic about this move, you could also add the next component, which is the feet. When you start with your hands down at your side and your feet together, when you get your hands all the way up to the top part of your head and you clap on the word go, you can also jump your feet apart like a jumping jack. Let's go. So then you have the hand component and also the feet component. And it gives you an entire body movement that gives you a little bit more power and a little more energy. Both are fine. Just decide which you're ready to commit to at that particular moment. So from now on, before you think of doing any major communicating, you'll do all your preparations, make your lists, use your visualizations. Then you'll take a deep diaphragmatic breath through your nose, make your sound wave, and go and perform. Go and present. Go and speak. Go and communicate with authority, clarity, conviction, and power.